Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Visit one of our 44 stores across Ireland for quality curtains and bedding at great prices. Find your perfect style today.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. But as I said earlier, the new junior minister at housing, James Cummins, wouldn't be a national figure, would soon be. By the end of this programme, he's in danger of becoming the most popular man in Ireland because he's floated the idea. People want to see a concretised, pardon the pun, but he floated the idea that up to now you could build a 40 square metre extension to the rear of your property once it was attached to the property. Now he's floating the idea that you can build a 40 square metre building at the rear of your property, but it doesn't have to be attached. And the reaction so far, from what we're hearing, is very positive. Now, there's a fly in the ointment. They're coming up with the idea, and then there's going to be a public consultation. Maybe we can help them today with the dreaded public consultation, which can drag on for years. Des, good afternoon. What do you think of the idea, Des? The little house in the back garden.
Yes, I think it's a wonderful idea, and it should have been done years ago. And I don't have any fears about it at all.
And do you have one?
I have a... You're allowed to build a recreational cabin.
Yeah.
Some people use them for offices or for... I use mine for painting. And obviously you don't want the smell of oil painting going in the house and for books and things like that.
And describe it to me.
So it's almost like a Scandinavian feel on the inside because you have... open to the roof, an apex roof. So it's almost like going on holidays in your garden. And you can heat them if you get the right specification. You can heat them to about 23, 25 degrees in maybe 15 minutes.
Wow. And it'll all be up to spec. It'll all be insulated and modern.
You just do a double wall with insulation in the walls, ceiling and floor. And they are cheaper to heat than a house.
Now, the difference with your one and what the minister is proposing is that there's no sewage or water supply, is there?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, people would use them for hobby rooms and things like that or music. What he's proposing is a great idea because if you build a 40 square foot extension from the back of your house, it has to be built on, it's built up to the boundary wall. Whereas if it's 40 square metres in the garden, it would have to be built 2 metres away from the boundary walls. So it would cause less overshadowing for neighbours. You could use them either as utility rooms or I think he's actually talking about intergenerational living.
Yeah.
You know, the parents might move in or if you had a child who was disabled but wanted some independence. That they would live in
or a couple, a young couple saving to try and get a mortgage.
Or a young couple saving and just using the house for the kitchen and things like that.
And big?
It's a great idea.
So at the moment, the room you're talking about, what size is it again, Des?
You're allowed to build up to 4x6, which is about, just broadly speaking, about 12 feet by 18 feet. So like a large living room in a house.
And now it will hopefully go up. Well, I can't say hopefully. It's up to the government or the people to decide.
You could easily have a bathroom in that, and you could easily have a living room and like a studio apartment or a bedsit. I know that's the wrong phrase for them, but a self-contained unit.
Yeah, with its own bathroom.
Oh, it was its own bathroom. And the thing would be, you know, this is for, if you like, house sharing or family sharing. This is not like an Airbnb. Because if you did an Airbnb, you would have to get planning permission. Or if you were...
Yeah, if you're around, I take
an independent
that point.
Letter, you'd need planning permission. But if you're just house sharing... That's allowed by law, and you can collect the rent. Whoever is renting in the house has to have access to all the facilities, like the kitchen in the main house.
Yeah, but there would be a kitchen, a self-contained small kitchen in these.
Well, you might just simply have a bedroom living room, and you use the house kitchen. So yeah. It's like a bedroom extension.
You might actually...
Except in the garden.
You might. There might be another benefit. You might use the house chef, be it the father or the mother.
Exactly.
Joe at RT.ie. Have you got one in your garden? Let us know. How much does it cost? Are you interested in getting one? Joe at RT.ie. And they are... anyone who's looked at brochures...
See, they're built within a week, Joe, once they arrive on site. This would be a very fast solution if we proceeded with this, because... They're built in factories, you know, like in Lithuania or the Baltic states, and they are assembled literally within a week. And they are about a third of the cost of concrete. And the whole of America and the whole of a lot of Europe build in wood. And
now,
we have a fixation with bricks and mortar.
Yeah, but people
which are very expensive.
What's the heating? Can I have a stove?
Oh, you could have a stove and you could have just an electric radiator. One electric radiator would be enough to heat it.
Okay.
They're very easy to heat, certainly for the Irish climate, because it doesn't get too cold or too hot. And when you consider we're spending, I think, nearly $2 billion in Donegal and other parts of the West to fix the pyrite problem. Had all those houses been built in timber, we wouldn't have had that expense. Okay.
But you could build. But you could, if you wish,
rebuilding them.
You could, and I take your point. But you could, if you wish, build a bricks and mortar 40 square meters, couldn't you?
You could build a bricks and mortar foundation, put a wooden modular house on top. You could do that at a much cheaper than building in bricks and mortar.
And you say with the new technology and materials in terms of
it's extraordinary. They build them like Lego bricks, Joe, and they're literally built in days.
Now, remember the other thing, and again, it came up during the recent storm. I remember doing it here in Liveland, but we didn't get anywhere with it. People were bemoaning the fact that new house builds couldn't have an open fire. Believe it or not, could not have an open fire. They'd have to have a stove. And of course, nobody thought, it was mentioned at the time here, because I remember it, nobody thought, what happens if your electricity goes, you don't have an open fire? Well, we discovered the cost of that in the last few weeks. But anyway, open fires are banned in new houses for environmental reasons, we presume. Stoves aren't, but stoves can be very expensive. Declan Alcock, what do you think of the idea? Joe at RT.ie, 51551.
Hi, Joe. Good afternoon. It's well done to John Cummins, TD in Waterford. About time that we heard this type of thing coming from politicians. We've had far too many restrictions in this country over the years.
Now, he's saying it's only an idea,
yes,
and I have to go for public consultation.
Yes, and let's have the public consultation.
And we'd have to hire consultants and lawyers and PR companies.
Let's have it open to the public and let people all make their submissions by email or whatever way they want to do with the price of the stamp. Let's encourage discussion.
And what is your submission, Declan?
Joe, I don't see a thing wrong with it. It should have been done years ago. Where I live, Joe, I don't want to say a whole lot, but I'm at home on my own. The next generation into the house, the family home, I was the last left in it. There's a huge garden that could be one of the next generation could build on it. And I'm not just talking about these wooden cabins. I'm talking about there's no reason why someone couldn't build bricks and mortar, and these things in back gardens could be fast-tracked through the planning process if you need planning, and there's a side entrance, and there's acres and acres and acres of unused backlands in towns like
Carlow
and
other
places like
that.
And
what about sewage and water?
Yeah,
and electricity.
Do all that. That can be all done. There's no reason why all that can't be certified by a proper quantity surveyor, engineer, and like that, a stroke of a pen, and all this type of thing. And once there's electricity, water, the whole lot. And but there's acres and acres of unused back. And Joe, they could put a cabin out in it. And I'm not. I shouldn't probably be saying it now because one of them could be listening. But maybe someone could put me there. When I'm an old uncle out into the cabin, and one of them could next generation come into the family home. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, exactly.
Big deal. Yeah, I mean let's do it. Let's get it going. Let's the whole thing. There was too many restrictions in this country over the years. There's, as I said, there's plenty of backland unused. Like generations ago, our grandparents, Joe, and all that type of people. You remember the sold potatoes to Donaldies in the gardens. The gardens are not being used anymore, and that's just the way to do it. So well done to John Cummins, give him 10 out of 10. About time we heard a politician talking like this.
Okay, Des, are there many of them where you live? I mean, have you noticed them in back gardens? Des?
Joe,
you're in Dublin, yeah.
Sorry, Joe, about that.
Are there many of them where you live?
Well, there are a number of them going up now, but I think people may be using them, you know, for overflow accommodation, for overflow of house materials and so on. That's what they're supposed to be. But I do agree with what your speaker has just said. The system is far too regimented. I mean, the regulations and the administration of the country should be for the benefit of the people, not for the benefit of just having, bureaucratic procedures for the sake of it.
51551.
Okay,
stay there, Declan. 51551. Text. John, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
You think there is a latch 22 here? There is a problem.
Well, no, I don't think there's a problem that can't be solved. I just think it hasn't been thought through or discussed by anybody so far. That
is, we've been in a housing crisis for 15 years.
And I mean, that's my agree completely. Exceptional measures need to be taken to solve it. And the idea of granny and granddad living in the back garden or students is all fine, particularly in a family setting. But if I'm not sure whether it is envisaged that third parties, if you like, could rent one of these, or that does there have to be a family connection? And you know, you've touched on the difficulties there about connecting these to the electric grid. Who would be, you know, would the ESB be happy to install a separate meter? And the heating issue is a problem. I mean, the idea of a stove in a small dwelling in a back garden is not a great idea, particularly for the neighbours. Where would the smoke go, if you like?
Well, it's all smokeless now, John. John, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, just and I think the biggest, and the other one then is sewerage. I mean, has anyone thought about the logistics of trying to connect one of these to the existing house sewage, and would it be capable of handling it? So those are just the thoughts I had. I mean, it's logistical. I mean, I think the idea itself is good, but the logistics of it may give rise to problems in the long run.
But it's not. Who's that, Des?
Yes, yeah. No problem there, Joe, because number one, most people who might have a garden shed have electricity to their garden shed. That's not a problem. The additional load on the sewage is no more than if you had an extra bedroom or if you had extra child that was born into the family. So the issue that your gentleman raised there is you would have a separate electricity meter. You would have to have planning permission if you're having a sort of an Airbnb, you know. But at the moment, you can house share with others and collect rent, if you like, tax-free.
Why do you want a meter?
But they have to have access to the whole house. So this is either like a couple of students sharing a house, or working people now mostly rent houses and share the facilities of the house, or else it's an extended family. And there is absolutely no logistical problem there. There wouldn't be any additional load than there currently is.
But the main thing, John, I think, and Des, will agree with me. John, the main thing is, if this is brought in, the sooner the better, according to most of our listeners, this 40 square metre building that you could put in your back garden, if it's brought in, it means it's legal. At the minute, I'm sure people are building maybe smaller cabins or whatever. I'm sure they are running a tap into it in some shape or form. I'm sure the young couple are probably sleeping in it, which is not allowed. But when you come to try and sell your house, you don't have planning permission for it. But if the government brought in a 40 square metre exemption, you automatically have planning permission. And by the way, then you're not going down the whole road of, if you're buying a modular architects and all that, carry on. You do have planning permission. So you can sell on the property, including the little house in the back garden.
No, I'm in favour of the idea, but I thought I'd raise the logistical issues. Would have to be attended
where
to.
The public consultation can kick in, you see. This is where, if the public consultation, people can make their comments and of their observations.
They're making it now. We'll send the minister the tape. We'll save him one and a half million.
You know.
We'll save him 1.5 million in consultants. We'll send him the tape from Liveline for public consultation. I'm losing a run on myself here. Michelle Hennessy. Michelle.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
How are you, Michelle, my belle? Down in Bray.
Yes. I think it's a genius idea. It's brilliant. And about time the government started speaking a bit of sense.
And what's your experience?
Well, I have children, teenage children, and, you know, the thing is, Joe, they're already talking about emigrating.
Yeah, my
so,
God. Yeah.
Because they can't afford to buy in this country. Imagine the amount of young people that may not go if this is bought in.
Okay. And when you, I don't know if you can look out your back window if you do have a garden. Can you see it? Can you see it there in your mind's eye?
Joe, my garden is my everything. It's a small garden.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore it. It is my solitude. I would give up every blade of grass in my garden if it meant my children stayed in Ireland and didn't emigrate.
Wow.
And I mean that. I would give up every inch of my garden.
And what age?
I probably would have to.
Yeah, what age are your children, do you mind me asking? Are they in that age range?
Yeah,
that,
I won't say names, but yeah. Well, 18.
Okay,
18,
well,
junior
then,
cert. Junior
wow.
cert, leaving cert.
And are they already saying to you, what are we going to do? Where are we going to live?
Of course, Joe. They can't afford to buy in Ireland. I mean, it is brilliant that this has been discussed. Because the crisis, it's just getting worse. It's just getting worse.
We know that.
It's devastating. And I know people are saying, what about the noise pollution? What about, you know, if everybody starts putting these? I feel we as a society have to do something. Because they're all going. They're all leaving the country. Why would they stay if they can't afford to buy a home?
And
brilliant.
Well, according to reports from the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party meeting last night, which, as you know, is in private, but they do give a media briefing afterwards, and Paul Cunningham was saying that Simon Harris, tarnisher Simon Harris, leader of Fine Gael, he said to the assembled TDs last night, this government will be measured on our housing record. He said, I want everyone to be deadly serious about housing. Mm. Deadly serious about housing. Now, will that translate? We don't know. But that's they said it's the number one priority, so maybe this is just one aspect of it.
Well, I tell you, it's the best thing. It's the best thing I've heard in a long time coming from the government.
And Michelle, what about the cost of it? Will the credit union give me a loan?
I'd say so. Joe. Imagine the amount of young people that wouldn't leave. Imagine. They can't get teachers in Dublin because they can't afford to live in Dublin. Wicklow, Kildare. It's a win-win. It's brilliant. Something has to be done, Joe. It can't keep going the way it's going.
How urgent do you think this is? Because they're talking about, well, you have to. Public consultation and all down the road, and then when you hear the phrase down the road in Ireland, you'll eventually hear the phrase kick the can. The can won't be far behind. Kick the can down the road, and then
it couldn't be more urgent, Joe. It couldn't be more urgent. I mean, it couldn't be more urgent. All the 30 year olds, 20 year olds that are still living at home, it's heartbreaking for them.
Yeah.
It really is, Joe.
Yeah, okay. Stay there, Michelle. Yeah, who's that? Dez.
Dez. Yeah, just very quickly, there's no great need for a big consultation. And I wouldn't be surprised if this could be done by merely statutory instrument. Because the only change that he's making, principal change in the first instance, is that the 40 square metres does not need to be attached to the main building. I mean, it's as simple as a sentence being changed, you know, to that you don't need planning permission for 40 square metres. The rest of the regulations about the distance from boundary walls is all there already.
Okay.
So there shouldn't be any problem
at all. Just sit into place. Okay, stay with it. Joe at RT.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Sinead gone. Kevin Regan. Kevin, good afternoon.
How you doing, Joe?
You want to get your spoken? Go ahead. Why not?
We make pods out of aeroplanes, upcycled aeroplanes. Mm-hmm. And we do them, they're ready-made for accommodation. So they come fully finished, dropped in on site, and just plug her in and she's ready to go.
And how much?
From accommodation from an 8-window pod, which is like for a single person or a couple, from 34,000 plus that.
And who's living? Well, you say you've sold 38 of them, but who bought them?
Different people. Not all of them are for accommodation. Some of them are for offices and okay. like for business, pop-up business. But probably around 15 of them are for people living in them.
And they have running water, sewage, electricity?
Everything. Well, everything the you have to have your septic tank on site or yeah, whatever you're doing, and water as well, and connected. So it's usually a concrete base poured to the size of it, and this all comes fully finished, and we drop it in on top of the site with the crane, back of a lorry.
And I'm all in favour of creativity, but why would I want to live in a recycled airplane?
Well, it's a fabulous solution because
okay.
it comes fully insulated, full heating done, everything. And absolutely gorgeous looking. And lasts basically forever because the plane is made out of aluminium.
Okay. I'm looking at your website there during the break.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically
different.
It's if you can imagine 2, 4, so what you say, 8, 2, 4, 6, there'll be no shortage of windows anyway. 2, 4, 6,
no.
8, 9 windows from a fuselage. If you look at the tube of a fuselage,
yeah.
You basically split the fuselage in three, do you? And get
nope.
a four even.
In two.
In two.
In two.
Yeah.
She's just okay. split in half. And it's the perfect structure because it's tough. She won't rot. It won't rust. We've them fully insulated. Everything's done on your heating comes.
Yeah,
on the fully in us. Everything's done.
And the rain pours off the circular,
exactly.
circular, and the curved roof. And Kevin, where do you get the planes?
Well, there's 4 locations in Europe,
oh,
and we're at the minute taking them in from Cardiff.
Okay.
And they're end of life planes. So once so many hours is done, all planes have to be decommissioned. And we're buying them when
course,
they're
yes.
on their last flight. We have an order in and we whatever we need. So if somebody says they want a 20-window airplane, we can get them cut over there to the 20 windows and ship it back. We're making these in Leitrim.
And they're already well insulated, aren't they? Extraordinarily
well.
Well,
given
the temperatures. Okay.
Yeah, well, we strip down the insulation and we start again. We reuse the insulation that's on it. And then add more insulation to
Do
it.
Do I need planner permission?
Look at grey area.
Okay.
Well,
with the new, with the proposed at 40 square metres, I wouldn't, would I?
No, definitely not.
Okay, so then I have fingers crossed. You're in the pig's back. By the way, would I have, do I still have Aer Lingus or Ryanair written on the outside?
No, you wouldn't, no.
Okay.
They want that all taken off before they're decommissioned.
Well, even if I wanted that, could I not get
it? Well, we can wrap them to we do a vinyl wrap. If people want
okay.
a vinyl wrap on them, we can wrap them whatever, as in vegetation or a log cabin or in any
yeah.
writing, whatever anyone wants. You can put on the Joe Duffy Show on the side of it and away you go.
Okay, and people use them, I presume, for offices where they can brand them now.
Yeah.
Where
exactly,
did you get the idea, Kevin?
It was a lockdown baby.
Lockdown, baby.
Sitting at home with nothing to do. I was looking to do an extension onto a garage.
Yeah.
And we're just coming up with ideas. And
brilliant.
I shot a guy a text of any ideas I want to do here, and he sent me a picture of a fuselage upside down on a runway. And that's exactly
yeah,
that's, how this started off.
Yeah, don't say that. Well, yeah, I know you have to. You're just explaining, but thank God nothing... No one died from that horrific upside down crash in Toronto yesterday, which was,
yeah, that was crazy,
miraculous. Miraculous, brilliant. Everyone, bar 3 people had escaped injury free, and I think the 3 people are going to fully recover. Is there anyone else doing it in the whole wide earthly world?
No, there was another crowd doing it in England, but yeah. I think they were involved with one of those small companies that went bust. They were a flight airplane company that went actually bust. So I don't know if anyone else doing it anywhere else. I know we have a lot of inquiries about Europe, but it's so hard to actually transport them over. The regulation and actually doing them is killing us.
What
you know, in transporting them when you've fully finished, you know.
But for Ireland, you don't have that paper.
No. We have no bother there. It's grand here, you know.
Okay, a fair play to you. I think it's a great idea. They look very novel.
Well, they're more than they're practical too. Yes, they do look very well, but they're very practical because if the climate we have in Ireland isn't really suitable to timber a lot of the time,
okay.
These are perfect, like.
And did your
no rust, nothing.
As far as you know, did your 38 aeropods, did they survive the storm?
Everyone.
Wow.
because we're close to Donegal now, and we have two of them down in a very exposed location down in Donegal.
Well done.
I went and checked them on the Sunday of the storm. We had no power here in Leitrim, so it was a good time to go down and check, and they were exactly where we left.
Okay, and what about heating? Can I put a stove in? No.
Oh yeah, we're actually putting one out for a guy at the minute, and he's actually bought two of them, and he's putting a stove in each pod.
Good lads, okay. It's called Aeropods.
Aeropods, yeah.
Okay. Yep. And can you cope with demand then?
We can, yeah. We haven't been crazy yet because the planning regulation is the killer.
And this really would, intriguing, you know? This
would be absolutely brilliant for us.
Okay.
Absolutely brilliant.
And they look well too, but they look more holiday-ish and fun.
Yeah,
and they look like fun. Lots of light at either end, lots of light through the windows.
Yeah,
and then you have the duty-free trolley coming up every half hour.
If anyone wanted a trolley, we'd sell them a trolley as well.
Say there, Kevin, Eddie.
And Bluetooth as well in them.
Okay, well done. Eddie, your daughter is living in one of them. Is that true?
No. My daughter's living with me.
She's living with you. Oh, sorry. Oh, wow.
Yeah, with three grandchildren.
Oh, okay. Fair play to you.
Back 3 years.
Fair play to you.
I'm listening to the show, and I'm just kind of... I don't get angry very often, Joe.
Yeah.
But it's like we had the last election, and one of the major issues on it was housing.
Yeah, the
you know,
major
I don't know how many.
Yeah.
There are probably 15, 20,000 homeless people now. And half of them are children. Now, I'm thinking about if I put a pod in my back garden. First of all, I've only a small back garden. I lose my garden. I don't know what the neighbours would think because I'm in a terraced house. And I'm just wondering, there was a lady speaking earlier about she thought it was fantastic there and that maybe would stop her children from emigrating
and
to go home. Well, that's okay, Joe, if you're a single person. You're probably never having any intention of getting married or maybe having kids. Or having your own little private house with your own little garden. I mean, I think it's important if you are going to have children that they have somewhere where they play securely and safely. And also as well, if you put a pod out the back garden, well, the only obvious way in and out of that is through the house. You know what I mean?
Unless you have a side entrance. Yeah.
So privacy has a lot to do with it. And it might be all right for a few months or maybe a couple of years.
In fairness, I don't think anyone is proposing it as the solution. But I think the main thing that's happening now is people are saying we need 100 different ideas for the complexity of the housing issue.
Well, I agree. It will suit some people, Joe.
Yeah.
But I don't think the people calling earlier, if you're building a pod in your back garden, and hoping that your children are going to stay in Ireland, and they're never going to have any aspirations of having their own home, or because the cost of it as well is enormous, you know, for the average person. But for me, it doesn't solve the solution. As I say, I think my daughter will be for at least the next 5, 6, maybe 10 years.
And is she entitled? I know. Is she entitled to go on the housing
list? No, she's on the housing
list,
Joe, and she was on the housing list.
Three
years ago, I asked her where she was on it, and she said she was 430th. And I asked her a couple of months ago there, and she said she's 370th, you know.
Yeah.
And a niece of mine was on the housing list for 15 years.
Yeah.
She, our newborn baby, she moved in with her mother, and he was a teenager before they got a house. That's just, you know, well, I mean,
I know, but we have to, we're all brilliant, including myself, at describing the problem, but we need to prescribe, we need solutions,
Well, I think, Joe, in all honesty, you know, there was a talk about putting into the Constitution that as a citizen of a country, you should be entitled to a house, a roof over your head, a bed you can sleep in, and a kitchen you can have your dinner in. And as far as, putting a pot out of a garden, it's not the solution, anywhere near the solution we need to okay. We need to build lots of social housing.
Everyone agrees with that, Eddie.
This is something now that people are moting, and you listen to some of the previous speakers, and this somehow is... It's a great idea. It's a solution to the problem. It's not a solution.
I know. I don't think anyone's saying that. It's a solution to some people's problem.
Short term. People want to have their own lives with their own families and their own kids, with their own private house, with their own roof over their heads.
Well, Eddie, the other question is, it's debated on every program. I was looking at comments on one program this morning, and it said, "Come up here and have a look at the ghost estate up here in Leitrim that's still lying idle." Yeah. You know, there's still lots of ghost estates, unfortunately. What happened there?
Where did that go wrong? Well, at Clareborn this morning, there was a guy there who seemed to not know a lot about housing, and he said a 40 square metre thing in your back garden is equivalent to a one-bedroom apartment.
Yeah,
you know, one bedroom apartment is going to solve the housing problem.
Yeah, but
if you put a one bedroom apartment in every back garden in Ireland, that wouldn't solve.
It'd solve the housing problem for some people. A couple saving or trying to save. Well, let's listen to Bill, who's a builder. Bill. Good afternoon, Bill.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thank you for putting me on air.
Yeah, you spent your life in construction.
I spent my life in construction. I served my time as a carpenter.
Good man.
From the time I was 15 to the time I was 21.
Okay.
Then I went through the process of coming up through the ranks, and I ended up as the managing director of a construction company. Now, I agree 100% with what the minister has said. There are a number of very, very good issues with it, but there are also a few downsides to it.
Well, begin with the upside, please.
The upside is they should be given a period of about 20 to 25 years. These are not family homes. They're accommodation for the times that we're in at the moment.
Yeah, okay.
And this business of people saying that you'd raise a family in it with three or four kids. You would not raise a family in 40 square metres with three or four kids. Let's get that straight and clear, first of all. We have a severe housing emergency at the moment. Now, my family got a council house in the 60s. We did a housing emergency then, and we've had a housing emergency, I think, ever since the state got independence. So we're living with the problem that we have always had. Part of the problem we have at the moment are the amount of refugees who are coming in from the likes of Ukraine, who we are entitled to be looked after, and we have a right to look after them as well.
Okay.
Now, the problem with building, not the problem, the cost of a 40 square metre, if you can get it built for €50,000, you would be doing well. But that only amounts to 2.5 years of rent in the modern era.
Good point,
So when people say it's going to cost 50,000, it's going to cost 2.5 or 3 years rent.
And you have something to show for it.
But not alone have you something to show for it. If you take my children both have homes, so I'm not speaking from a personal point of view here, so let's be clear with that. But if there's a family home and you've a husband and a wife and you've a daughter with grandkids, you've grandkids and stuff like that, so the chances are that you're moving up the ladder in age. And what could happen is there's no reason why further down the road the parents could move into the one, what we call a one-bed apartment out the back, and the family could actually move into the home.
Okay, yeah.
And then we all know the property prices go up in value. If there were additional members of the family, and the family had to be sold further down the road, and they'd been saving up because they'd been, after a couple of years, the cost of the apartment out the back is cleared, and they'd be saving up because they know they'd be not there permanently, and then they get their money out of the sale of the family home when the parents die, the chances are they'd have a decent deposit for a home. Because people are saying that in 10, 15 years, property prices will come down. Now, I don't think they will come down personally. They came down during the depths of the bad recession. But that was a worldwide recession. That wasn't a recession that we have here. But there has to be, and this is one of the clear things there has to be, there has to be access to a sewer system.
Yeah.
The job that would be carried out would have to be carried out correctly and would have to be supervised by a competent contractor. Now, I'm not saying by professionals.
But isn't the main thing, for example, is this, if the sewage system is inadequate, the people it affects most are the people using it, and it's in their interest to put in a proper one.
No. What you have to remember is, if you go back to the old-fashioned way, there were 6 family homes on a sewer system that then ran out to the main sewer.
Okay.
So if you're on the start of the line, you start off with a 4-inch sewer pipe.
Yeah, yeah.
That takes the sewerage from 6 houses.
Right.
And then when it goes further down the line, it goes into a main. The main could have been a 9-inch main, could have gone up to an 18-inch main, or it would have gone up to a 2-foot main. And then a main sewer could have been up to a 4-foot main. So from that point of view, there's not a problem. And when we're talking about those houses years ago, like if I'm correct, people say now the average family have 1.9 children. Where I grew up in Raheny, there were families with 15 and 16 children.
I know.
So if you had 15 or 16 children and parents using the 1 4-inch pipe and it didn't block, there's no reason why, if you have an elderly couple in the house and you have a daughter or a son with a couple of kids out the back, that the 4-inch pipe won't work. And with regards to the electricity, it's all you have to do. There'll be 2 things you need to do. You need to check that the mains coming into the main house was more than capable of taking the additional power that would be put on. And you could have a check meter put on that meter, which would clarify the amount of units that was being used. And then the family in the one-bedroom department would be able to calculate what their bill is.
Very straightforward. Very straightforward. It seems too good to be true.
As I said, I left school at 14 and I worked all my life on the building. So I'm speaking here as basically a builder. Building is not complicated. If you look at most buildings, they're square or they're rectangular.
Yeah.
And you build them. The floor to ceiling has to be 8 foot high, 2.4 metres now, right?
Yeah.
And you can, if you want to put a flat roof on it, you can put a flat roof. But just make sure you put a good fall on the flat roof that you try and end up with no ponding. Because if you end up with ponding, you're open to a little bit of leaking. Whereas if it's a 15-degree pitch on a flat roof, you'll never have a drop of water. If you put Kingspan sheeting on the roof, insulated sheeting on the roof, that's guaranteed for 25 years.
Right.
And if you want to design it properly, if you look at an awful lot of the modern buildings around town, the external envelope of them is all done in Kingspan sheeting anyway.
And Bill, we'll no doubt get it in the world we live in, but what do you think the objections will be, the Latch 22 will be? What will people give out about?
Well, what do I think the objections will be?
Yes.
Well, we're a nation that are full of objectors, right? But the people who will not object are people whose families will benefit from it.
Okay.
The people who will object would be people who it doesn't make any difference to. But if you look at it, when they go to build an estate anywhere, whatever type of an estate, you get people objecting, Then when the estate is finished and they go to build the next estate, the people who were living in the estate are the people who objected to in the first place. Okay. Now object to the estate, but they're going to build.
Stay there, Bill. Joe at RT.ie. Michael, Bill might have some advice for you. You want to build one of these in your back garden. Why?
Well, absolutely. I suppose we're in the very same situation. I was just listening to your last caller there and I totally agree with him. I have the plans for a 25 square metre, which is the regulation at the moment. And again, like our house would probably be too big. And so while we have some of the kids at home at the moment, one of them has gone to the States because he said it's far too expensive to buy a house over here.
Okay.
The other ones we're keeping here at the moment, and we want them to kind of stay to save up for a mortgage or a good deposit rather than going into rented accommodation and then paying rent and also trying to save for a deposit and fitting out the house, etc. So we would be quite happy to. And I only had this conversation with my wife the other day. If we built out something at the back,
okay,
I'd be quite happy to go into it because, you know, as you get older, it's much, much harder to maintain and keep the, you know, a decent-sized house.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's so more maintenance.
Yeah. The only restriction I suppose I'd see on it is, and I know, as I mentioned to earlier on there, I could see situations where it wouldn't be carte blanche 40 square metres because you might have gardens, you might have terraced houses, you may not have emergency access for ambulances or fire brigades should anything happen out at the back. You also have, I think at the moment, now somebody could correct me on this if I'm wrong, I think if you build up to the 25, you have to have a minimum of 25 square metres of remaining garden. And if you have other sheds...
Yeah, obviously it's a space. Yeah.
And you might... I mean, you could have a small garden. Somebody would come along and build a 40-foot or 40-square-metre, what could be considered a monstrosity to the neighbours at the back, and they're overlooking this. So there will be restrictions. I don't think it's just going to be 40 square metres. Now, we could do it at the moment. I could do 40 square metres, and I'd have a look out and say, yeah, there'd be a fair bit of garden left, but for smaller gardens...
Mm.
Yeah. You know, there will be obviously restrictions.
But would a lot of all this, Michael, not be self-policing in that nobody wants, if the garden is too small, you're not going to say, Mammy or Daddy, I don't want to move into a little house where I'm facing a brick wall.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a lot of this will be self-policing, surely.
Yeah. Well, if it was 40 square metres, I could probably start next week. Now, I do a huge amount of DIY. I practically invented it, I suppose. I'd build one of these myself. Now, it probably would take me a couple of months, but
You reckon you could build it yourself?
Oh, yeah. It'd be a wooden structure, but you do it.
Now, it wouldn't be the Lego I'd have Innisfree, a small cabin built there of clay and wattles made, no?
No, it'll be the right
full
up to spec. Full spec.
Well done.
Full spec. And I do it because I would have an interest in it and it would be a DIY,
have you plans, Michael, in your head?
Yeah.
Or
I plan some writing. A plan's drawn up and I just go through it methodically and I would be very, very, big into the regulations and compliance and things like that. Make sure it's done. Because
In the current circumstances, if you were to start building, somebody could object and the planning authorities would stop you.
Yeah, that's the danger, you see. If you go over the 25 at the moment,
okay.
Now, you might get away with it, but then, somebody was quite rightly saying earlier on, you're trying to sell the house in the future.
Exactly, yeah.
You might have to go for attention. Then.
So as far as you're concerned, the sooner the better. John Cummins, the new superstar of Irish politics.
Yeah.
He was the youngest mayor of Waterford ever in 2013. Yeah. He's a Fine Gael TD. There's politics in his family. It looks like he'll be carried shoulder high around the country by young couples if he gets this through quickly.
And he should be. He's talking sense. He stuck his head above the parapet and it's about time. You know, he's talking logic and hopefully it's not dragged out for years, as you quite rightly say, with consultation and... You know, reports about reports and clarifications about reports.
Well, it's just one idea. It's not going to solve the problem in itself, but it's just one idea. Yeah. Michael, you're good at DIY, obviously.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Well, I think so.
Well, a lot of people aren't. I don't know. It's pub talk, but I can fairly say, including myself, by the way, the vast majority of people who talk about the housing crisis couldn't put a nail in a wall.
Oh, God. No, I enjoy it.
You know, that's the country we've become. They can do laptops and every other TikTok and YouTube, but they couldn't put a nail in the wall. Now, the only reason people ask me to put a nail in the wall is if I go into a house and say, I'm trying to find a water pipe. Joe, will you put a nail in the wall? And I'll immediately find it because I immediately burst the pipe. It's just an intuition I have, Michael. Okay, Michael, thanks indeed.
Yeah, what I did, I retrofitted our house, the whole house on the inside. Brought it up to spec with insulation and plasterboard and plastered the whole thing. And it saves us a fair bit of money and the house is very, very warm.
Well done.
A lot of hard work. It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy.
Well done. Well, stay well and good health, you know. And it looks like you might be getting going quicker than you thought a few weeks ago. Good market if you had. Joanne, sorry for holding. You're totally in favour of the idea.
I have a different idea, Joe.
Okay.
And it's something I have done myself.
All right.
So the first figure I want to throw out is, I didn't have a pension. And to fund an income of $1,400 a month.
Okay.
Or $1,100 a month in a pension fund requires a fund of $350,000 to $400,000.
Wow.
Now, that is the income you get on the rent-a-room scheme.
Okay.
Now, the government can't solve this problem on their own.
True.
The people of Ireland can help. And without covering all our gardens in log houses, houses with garages, many of which are serving no function, these garages could be converted, extended into magnificent apartments.
Okay, yeah.
And this is what I have done.
Wow.
I have rented to two couples. Each of them stayed for 2 years. One couple went to Australia. The second couple were able to save enough money because the rent was so low with no bills.
Well done.
And they have now purchased their first home.
And you had it basically funded your little pension?
Well, long term, once I have paid it, because I do have a mortgage on it.
Okay.
Now, what else is beautiful about this idea is it is wheelchair friendly. It is like a little bungalow attached to my house.
Yeah.
So when I get crocked, I can move into my garage with beautiful insulation, access to my own garden, and someone else can live in my house.
Yeah. Fantastic. Fantastic.
But if more people in Dublin did this, we could have the young nurses, guards, carpenters, being able to live in the city where we have existing services.
Yeah, yeah.
Clubs,
transport, everything,
clubs,
yes, shops. Yeah,
transport,
yeah, yeah.
Everything. So without covering the whole countryside in apartments, we could, within the existing infrastructure of massive housing estates in Dublin, create hundreds of these units all over Dublin.
And a lot of, especially...
There's another element to it.
Okay.
I mean, these people were total strangers that came and rented. Now, they might have been through word of mouth, I know someone.
Yeah.
But it was great security of mind. When you go away for a weekend, you know that you've somebody coming and going from your property, someone who might put your bin out for you.
True.
Someone who might look after the dog for you,
and the
collect
lights,
a parcel
and the
for
lights
you.
Are on, yeah.
These, in all instances, these people have become great friends of ours. And I think of all the houses that have only one or two people living in them and garages empty next door, serving no function for anybody, that could be providing wonderful security for the people living in these homes.
Yeah. Now, the rent-a-room, the downside of the rent-a-room is that you have someone living in your house in terms of privacy.
Well, you see,
yes.
This is the reason the rent-a-room scheme isn't taking off as it should. Because people don't want people living in their home.
Yeah, I know, walking down the corridor.
So the garage is attached to your home or beside your home.
If you have a garage.
Once they're converted, they've no access. Do you know, you can put a door between you and the garage and they do their thing, you do yours.
Okay. But you think it's a great idea overall?
Anyone that has seen my little apartment thinks, why is there no government scheme to incentivize the building of these?
Okay.
Fast track planning and get a dedicated county council official to fast track the planning.
It's fast track planning in Ireland is like trying to find the third secret.
But Joe, this is
everyone's a favour of it, but they can't did it.
And
they can't
if you
find
had,
it. So maybe that's the way around it. 40 square
meters
40 square meters are under no planning needed, no paperwork, no. Once you do it properly. Okay, Joanne,
yes.
Well done. And stay, you said when you're, Joanne, will you stay uncrocked for as long as you can, please?
I do my best, Joe.
You sound great.
Thank you very
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, Joanne. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Yesterday we spoke to Professor Shane O'Mara of Trinity College Dublin about the late Eleanor Maguire. She died, unfortunately, very young, 54, at the beginning of January last. And she was we're now discovering, a lot of people knew this, but It didn't warrant an obituary in an Irish newspaper. Maybe it will now, but people are speaking, telling us about Eleanor and her remarkable three achievements in the area of cognitive neuroscience. And one of the people who knew Eleanor was Teresa Bourke. Teresa is retired full professor and chair of psychology at DCU. Eleanor, Teresa, how did you know Eleanor?
Well, first of all, good afternoon, Joe. I got to know Eleanor initially. She was an undergraduate student of mine when she was studying for her BA in psychology in UCD.
Okay.
And then, I suppose more than anything else, I had the remarkable honour of supervising her PhD. After she completed her degree, she moved to Swansea, did a one-year taught master's programme, and then came back and undertook her PhD studies while working at Beaumont Hospital. So I was her supervisor.
And even at that stage, Teresa, was Eleanor interested in memory and that whole area which she seemed to specialise in subsequently?
Well, Eleanor has conducted a number of interviews over the years, mainly because she was so famous within the neuroscience community.
Yeah.
And Eleanor was very open about the fact that it took her some time to establish precisely what aspect of psychology she was particularly interested in. And my first year in UCD on staff, I was teaching a final year course in neuropsychology. It was still very much in its infancy in Ireland at that time. Eleanor became fascinated with neuropsychology in particular, which is why she then moved to Swansea to take a master's degree. We didn't have one, a similar type course in Ireland at the time. And she came back then to work in Beaumont Hospital, where there was a fledgling surgical program for individuals with intractable epilepsy. So Eleanor was working along with the epilepsy surgery team. And one of the things we knew was that many of these patients suffered some degree of memory difficulty as a result of their epilepsy. So Eleanor's interest was in memory effectively from the get-go.
And she was very, very keen on research. And she was, you say she was a very good researcher. She knew.
Eleanor was an exceptional researcher.
Okay.
I think it was characterized by the fact that she was willing to ask interesting questions about real world aspects of, you know, human memory, for example. So she wasn't particularly interested in just carrying out laboratory-based studies.
Okay.
She wanted to understand the impact of difficulties with memory on individuals as, you know, they worked their way around in the world. Even her PhD itself was actually on the topic of real-world spatial memory following temporal lobe surgery in humans. So she wanted her research to address questions that were of direct relevance to individuals with memory problems. And that was obvious right from the beginning.
And tell us, Therese, about Eleanor getting a cameraman on a motorbike. And this was driving around Black Rock on overlapping routes. What was that about?
I think what we need to do is, without giving away my age or giving too much information, we have to consider that Eleanor was working on her PhD between 1991 and 1994.
Okay.
So we certainly weren't in the era of virtual reality. We had a small number of video games. You know, you might remember some of the early video games. But in order to look at something like the real world topographical memory or memory for location, we needed to come up with some method by which we could study it. And this is where Eleanor's genius, if you like, came to play at the very early stage. We wanted to make sure that rather than studying a patient's memory for tiny objects on a table in a room, we wanted to look at routes or navigation in the real world. So a friend of Eleanor's who was a cameraman volunteered his services and the services of a friend.
Yeah,
and we arranged to get videos made of two separate routes through Black Rock.
Brilliant.
But routes that overlapped. so they crossed over at a point on the route.
Okay.
And the idea then was that individuals who had undergone surgery would study each of the routes until they got to know all of the buildings, all of the landmarks on a route, and then they learnt the second route. When we were certain that they knew these two routes, that they were fully familiar with them, Eleanor then waited for a period of time and then tested their memory for the information they had previously learned.
Incredible.
And in doing that, so the video was made at eye level as if you were walking along, scanning the environment. So you were looking at buildings to both your left and your right, looking up and down side streets, etc. The kind of thing that VR technology can do quite easily now.
Yeah.
And Eleanor's results demonstrated for the first time in human subjects that whether the surgery was on the left or the right side of the brain, that individuals had difficulty recalling aspects of the spatial routes.
Okay, incredible. Incredible creativity. And you use the word genius.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, Eleanor has, in a number of interviews over the years, talked about the fact that what inspired her to study spatial memory in particular, as opposed to, you know, my own PhD was on visual memory. Eleanor's was on spatial. She had read a summary of an article by two, you know, very famous people in neuropsychology. That's John O'Keefe and Lynn Nadell.
Okay.
And they had written a book in the late 1970s on the hippocampus as a cognitive map. Eleanor had read that, was fascinated by their work. But she also noted, as an acute, or an astute rather, clinician, that patients who were undergoing the surgery in Beaumont at the time were spontaneously reporting that their spatial memory wasn't as good as it had been.
Ah.
So she put these two things together. That is, the O'Keefe and Nadell work on the hippocampus and its role in spatial memory, particularly in animal species, and asked the question whether the same might be true in terms of humans. Eleanor was inspired by the work of O'Keefe and Nadell, but I think she herself would have been exceptionally chuffed by the fact that Lynn Nadell, one of the co-authors of that work that inspired her, wrote in her memory on a memory wall created by her colleagues. I'll just read from it if you don't mind. I first heard of Eleanor in 1994 from John O'Keefe, the other co-author, who told me about an outstanding student whose dissertation he had just read as the external examiner, and how she was going to change the field. I had approached John O'Keefe to act as the external examiner for Eleanor's thesis, and he made it absolutely clear, even at her viva, that this would be world-changing in terms of the impact of her research.
And there are obviously, as I said, I came across this accidentally at the weekend in the New York Times, of all places. But I've been watching videos. Last night I watched a video called AlphaGo, which is this based on this game Go. It's the whole thing of memory and AI. And remember, one of her students was Demise Hassabis, who subsequently got the Nobel Prize for his work in AI. But the whole area of memory and AI and artificial intelligence is so popular at the minute. And I found Eleanor's, and I tweeted one of her short pieces explaining her work there this morning at Joe Liveline. She is so accessible. And when I watched the first video, I couldn't stop. I had to go and watch more of what, because she was so accessible about memory. Yeah, and we're all thinking of dementia and the world we now live in. Yeah. Incredible, groundbreaking.
If I might give just one other quote from Eleanor, Joe, one of the things that made Eleanor stand apart from so many other researchers is that her interest in conducting research studies wasn't just from an academic or a theoretical point of view, but always with a view to helping individuals who suffer from something like memory impairments. And in an article she published in Current Biology back a number of years ago, she actually says that learning and memory are so fundamental to us, so enmeshed throughout cognition, that solving memory or solving the issue that is memory, unpacking its neural mechanisms and being able to conceptualize it fully will, I believe, result in revelations across all branches of neuroscience. Okay. And once that's done, the whole point of this endeavor and the real work that is to improve the lot of the memory impaired in a rational and principled way and to inform education can then begin in earnest.
Okay.
So for her, this was so fundamental to our abilities as humans and then treating people who suffer from dementia, from any other cause of memory impairment, that that is the key challenge for us as scientists.
Okay,
and that's what drove her, you know.
It's and again, unfortunately, it's tinged with deep, deep sadness because Eleanor, the reason we're talking about Eleanor, she died in January at the very young age of 54. And again, condolences to Paddy and her parents in Dublin. Theresa Brooke, Theresa, thank you so much. Theresa's retired. Were you doing neuroscience before anyone else was, Theresa?
I would certainly have been one of the early adopters, yes. Okay. I took a post in UCD in 1989 after completing a postdoc in Montreal.
Okay, well
so
done.
We were, you know, in on the ground floor, if you like.
Well done, and God rest Eleanor. That's Theresa Bourke, retired full professor and chair of psychology at DCU. Thank you so much, Theresa, and God rest Eleanor. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And back to the proposal by John Cummins, the junior minister, Department of Housing, to allow 40 square metres building in a back garden without planning permission. Dave, good afternoon.
Hey Joe, how's it going?
Good. What's your situation at the moment, David?
Well, we got evicted last year from our house and we had to do something in the meantime. So I put a mobile up, which is 40 square metres by size. And I also extended it by 30 square metres by myself, which is obviously 70 in total, but still.
Which is illegal. Don't mind me saying that.
You know, which is absolutely, it's purely legal. I know that, but lack of options.
I understand.
I had to do something about it. I have a family and there was only either that or, you know, there was much other options to go by. So,
and do you worry about it being illegal?
Absolutely, I worry about it every day. But thank God that the people I live nearby are all kind of respected, and we all kind of respect each other. We don't really, you know, put ourselves in bad places. So, and we're a nice little family. We have we go to local school, and there's nothing like we're doing no harm to anybody out here.
Yeah, and then this news today. That you couldn't be in trouble with the law if it's 40 square meters or less. That means you fit.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. We would fit inside that kind of criteria somewhat, but it opens up a kind of envelope that we could possibly get planning for something a little larger that can suit our size. I mean, 40, I'd build a 30 square meters. That's, if you do a 10 extra, you could definitely get a one-bedroom flat in there very comfortably for a young couple, you know, and that can suit them. But it's on the right path to the direction when we kind of need, because all I'm looking for is freedom, the freedom to do what I like, and you know, we're back here, and we're not trying to obstruct. I'm not building some structure that's sticking out of the blue here. You know, I'm blocking anything. No, I'm locking nobody here. We're on our own, and it's.
And what about utilities, sewage, water, electricity?
So we're sharing a septic system with the main house.
Yeah, okay.
And that seems to be fine. It's quite a large septic system, so that's quite fine. I know there's a builder talking about this earlier, but I have a smart meter attached to the main house. So I monitor my own electricity usage.
Well done. And that's straightforward, is it?
And that's quite straightforward. That's quite easy to do. But a lot of houses, people don't realise, you know, you can have one electric shower per household because that's the amount of electricity you can take off the grid. If you have more than one, you can possibly overload the main circuit. So if you have an outside cabin, you can use a lot more gas, like a combi gas boiler, which can accommodate a lot of the heavy usages. So there's ways around this, and you know, there's a lot to look into it, but it's definitely the right direction.
And is it your family's way of saving for a deposit, David? Is that the intention?
Absolutely, yeah. It's saving for deposit. We had a deposit, and I obviously spent it on this for that time being, so we're going to save up in the meantime until we get to the next stage. I have a site ready. I had transmission on the way, but as things folded out, it was just not possible, and I had to do something in the time. Obviously, rental was not an option because there was nothing there.
Okay, best of luck with it, Dave and family. Thanks, Dave. Laurie O'Donnell, Laurie, what's your situation?
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good.
So we built a log cabin about 5 years ago now at this stage. So we're living in it 5 years. The cabin is absolutely perfect. It's a one-bedroom cabin between the two of us. My partner went back to college, so it was kind of the only option for us, really, if we wanted to stay in this country. The cabins were the only option. We couldn't rent, not even looking to buy a house. It's just not affordable for people in their 20s at the moment.
And did you need planning permission for it?
I suppose you do, but like Dave said to you earlier, I suppose a lot of people don't go for planning because they're afraid of rejection. Now, Cork seems to be, as a county, the best when it comes to planning. The Cork County Council seem to be the best for
it. Would it fit in the new proposal, 40 square metres?
Ours is only 25 square metres.
Well, then you wouldn't need it.
No. And I mean, they're built in 3 days. You can move into them after 3 days. They are.
And what about heat? Run through it. Heat, water, electricity, sewage, kitchen.
So like as Dave said, all kind of the electricity and sewage runs off the main house. So we're lucky enough that we have a bit of space at the back of the parents' house, so we were able to do it. So it all runs off the house, runs perfect, and we've got solar panels on the house then, so it all runs solar because it's all electric on the inside.
So you're saying to John Cummins, bring it on.
Come here, I've been advocating it for so long.
Okay.
I've done so many articles on this, like they need to be brought in. They are a big solution.
Okay, Laurie, that's Laurie O'Donnell, Dave, Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Lee Ryan is on the line. You have a company called Granny Flats.
I do indeed, Joe, yeah. I do. We're a construction company. And I suppose maybe 10 years ago it was all extensions of, you know, renovations. And about 7 years ago, I diverted into a company called Granny Flats. So it's the needs. It's what the market kind of was asking for. So we kind of do turnkey Granny Flats, but ours are slightly different because they're not modular. They're built. So it's
bricks
exact
and mortar,
same spec. Exactly. The exact, in fact, a little bit better. So
and are people sticking to 25 square metres at the minute because that's all that's allowed?
Well, yes and no. Depending on what, I suppose I have two types of clients. A lot of clients I would have would be, let's say, slightly older clients who live in Dublin, typically, and there might be three generations of families. Children can't.
So, what difference as I come to a close? What difference will the 40 square meter rule, or the exemption? What difference will it make?
Huge, because
positively
up to now, very positively. Up to now, you have to attach it to your house.
Yeah.
You can't get planning permission for a standalone unit. You know, so it's sometimes they take a lot of light if you have to attach it, a unit that's 40
square meters. If the minister wants his public consultation, there it is for nearly 75 minutes. It's no way scientific, but the 99% positive for his proposal. Let's go, say our listeners. Sound, Niall McMonagall, broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin, producer Penny Hart. Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Cozy up with the new arrivals, in-store or online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.